Welcome to another fantastic interview here on Kung Fu Conversations. We are honored and a little bit humbled by having Sifu Douglas Wong on today. Sifu Wong, thank you for making the time to talk to us today about life and Kung Fu and everything in between.
Sounds good. I'm glad to be you guys having me here on your show.
So I have something funny to tell you. Apparently, you have a beef with my old stomping ground that you also momentarily grew up in. I grew up right outside, 15 miles away from Grand Lake, Colorado.
Yes.
Do you remember what years you and your family had the little restaurant up there, Sifu Wong?
We were here, I was born in 48. We moved out in, 1952, 53, around that time period.
So you were so young.
Yep. I went to kindergarten and first grade there in Denver, Colorado. So around that time period.
Do you remember the name of the Chinese restaurant that your folks had in Grand Lake?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't recall it at all. Sorry.
That's okay. You would have been 3 or 4 years old. So
yeah, I was young. So, you know, I don't remember the names.
Have you ever been up to Grand Lake since then?
No, I haven't. I haven't gone back up there. I've been to Denver a couple of times because of the AAU meetings. So that okay. I was vice chairman of the Chinese martial art thing. So I went for the meetings over there in Denver.
Well, we're going to have you up on a road trip and for, either a cup of tea or a cheeseburger up in Grand Lake someday. I can't even imagine how much it's changed in almost 70 years. So
you're right. Yeah, I go to Colorado once in a while. My daughter lives there. She lives in Thornton, Colorado. Yeah.
Sure, it's just down the street from us.
Yeah. So yeah, she's my two grandsons there. So you know, my wife goes every month to visit. So I go every so often.
Nice. Well, when you're in Excellent. Town, we'll have to meet for a cup of tea or something.
Sure, sounds great. Sounds good.
So I was listening to a great interview that your son did with you. And something really surprised me about your martial arts origin story. Would you give us a brief synopsis of what your training was like a little bit? And then I have questions off of your origin story because your story was very unique. And I have some things that I'd like to point out and ask you about your martial arts training story. Okay. Could you give us a little background, Sifu?
I'll try, okay. But some of my memory is gone because I had a stroke. So there's some stuff that is not there anymore. I got pictures and videos of me at the events talking. I can't recall a damn thing about it.
So
I'll try to do what I can do.
That's all. Sounds good. Sounds good.
Some things is just like yesterday, so it's there. So certain things are not there. I started out taking judo. That's the first martial arts that I took. That was a Gardena. That's the only thing that was being offered. Kung Fu was not even offered in Los Angeles during that time period. So that was not until way later. So in between that time period, I went into judo first. I went into Shotokan, Goju style, Tangsudo, Aikido, any art that was open, you know, I wanted learn. So that's where I started. Then my teacher opened up the first Kung Fu school in 1959, Los Angeles, Chinatown, as Grandmaster Art Yui Wong. So I joined him not until the early 60s later on. But by that time, I already had probably about 7-8 years of martial art training prior to getting into Kung Fu. Now, I tried to get into Kung Fu earlier, but through the Wong Association, because my dad was not in a certain part of the village, they would not take me. So I couldn't learn from the Wong Association. So there are many associations down in Los Angeles, the Lu's, the Chin's, the, you know, everything else you can name it, that they had it. But so I later on learned from some of my friends from the Lu Association, learned the Chodi Foot System. They Master Lao Ban from San Francisco. So I picked up a little bit of Chodi Foot from there. And during that time period, you know, I was taking the Kung Fu from Art Wong, but we were also going to what's called LA City College at that time period. And during that time period, I met my training partners, you know, that I've known for over 50 years. That was Carl Totten, Tommy Chan, and Wilson Kwan. So all four of us have been together since the 60s. And we trained together. So at during open classes during LA City College, we got together and practiced all the time. And then we met many other people there from Hapkido, from Tang Sudo, from Choi Li Foot, Eagle Claw, Praying Mantis, Shotokan, you know, you name everything. We were all practicing to see what the hell worked. So during that time period, you know, I found some of our Kung Fu flowery hand stuff didn't match up to some of the hard style punching, like from Shotokan. You know, they threw that punch in there. If you didn't stop it, if you tried to block with these soft blocks sometimes, it didn't work. So, you know, it was a training period for all of us. And we practiced 7 days a week. We were crazy fanatics. And we were going around to visit various schools during that time period. Because L.A. was a melting pot. And you had a lot of the top teachers here. You had Fumi Demura was out there. Oshima, Nishiyama, Ed Parker, Hu Rangdo, the Lee brothers. I mean, I was going everywhere, anytime, just to meet them, to practice. The BKF was another one that was one of my favorites. I always worked out with them. I was Steve Sander, or turned Steve Muhammad later on, and Donnie Williams, and they were the top fighters at that time. So we always got together. They were the top fighters. I was top form competitive weapons and hand forms. So we always got together. So I've known those guys for forever. And right now we're working on a documentary on the BKF history. It's called Our Fists Are Black. So I'm working on that documentary right now. It's been going on for the last 4 years. So I have a podcast with them. Zoom meeting with them next week. So we've been doing it for every other week. Try to go back into history, talk about the tournament, how it all started, who we met during that time period, politics going on during that time period, Japanese to Korean to Chinese, you name Okinawan, Filipino, everything. This is a melting pot. It was the greatest time in LA to study everywhere. And I got to meet a lot of different masters, you know, from different systems and just to learn some of the different movements they had. Some of the Chun Li foot where they one guy was, you know, took the bucket of water and used his chi and moved it around, popped his hand, made the water jump out the bucket. I mean, we were seeing that, bringing flies back to life, breaking bricks every other number, you know, seen it all. It was fun. It was learning. And another style was Mao San, which is one of the black arts, you know, and they would put mouthful of incense, a whole handful into their mouth, and nothing would happen to them. They'd put it all over their body, you know. And my teacher told me not to learn that style because you have to be a certain way of doing that, and it's going to take away from your health. So I avoided it. I saw it. I got to see some of the different craziness that they did. But like I say, we learned a lot of different things. I got exposed to many different systems and just loved it all. So
that's amazing.
That's fantastic.
Okay, any questions from you guys?
Owen?
Why don't you start off, Randall?
Okay, I know this is going back in time, Sifu. But if you can, what do you remember training like with Ark Wai Wong? What was that like? What would a class be like? What would segments of his teaching style and methodology be like? Because my goodness, that gentleman had so much material to pull from. I mean, he had the five animals and the five families method. How, that's amazing that he could contain all of that in one person. What was training with Grandmaster like?
There's a couple ways. Okay. One, in the regular classroom was kind of bad. Okay. Because I came from a structured system of, you know, karate has a different ways. You come there, you bow, you do your techniques, you know, your breathing, whatever it is. And then you have your warm ups, you have your practice, your free sparring, whatever it is. In his class, when I first went up there, I was sort of disappointed. Because what happened was not everybody was practicing at the same time. There was no set program. Everybody, there's chairs all around the whole studio. So you see these guys sitting and talking, having a soda, taking it easy. Other guys are back there pounding with the ditta jiao in the hand, practicing the iron palm. You know, but there was no formal class. You know, it was really difficult in the beginning when I saw that. It was, since I came from a structure, I said, whoa, how are you gonna learn anything like this, you know, in a structured way? But see, well, I was taking private lessons also, so that's a whole different animal altogether because it was just one-on-one. So
sure.
So everything was taught, you know, whatever he did, you had to follow. That was the whole thing. If you caught it, great. He would teach you more. If you didn't catch it, he'd water it down. I seen him do private lessons for people where you do maybe 8 or 9 circular movements, and the guy can't catch it. He only catch 3. So he watered it down to those 3 movements, and he forgot about the other 5 movements altogether. And so that's how the way he taught. So if you picked it up, you got stuff. You learn. So me, yes, I picked it up because I was already intrigued by other style and learning, watching what the upper half of the body would do with the lower half. Because the legs got to work with the upper half of the body. You got to have the stance. If you don't have the power from the stance, you can't do anything with the hands on top. So, you know, I learned that from the other system besides the Chinese system. So that was what was good for me. I learned to observe. So I saw that. So later on, when myself and Carl Tomlin took other private lessons to learn the more advanced form, he would watch the feet, I would watch the upper part of the body, and we combined it together. And so we got it down pretty well. So that's how it went. So you know, we weren't stupid. You know, we didn't try to catch the whole thing. Say, yeah, you do this part and I'll do this part. Got it. And when he came back, he said, damn, you guys got it. I said, yes, we do.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
And other times when I was taking privates from him, he was teaching me how to, like, break the bricks. But he would take those cylinder, the building, the walls. He would crack those suckers and break them like there were nothing. Ooh. And, you know, he would stand on top of me for the balance, for the crane, doing this movement. But he would just iron palm and break that suckers like it was nothing. It was like dust. And he had me do it. I about broke my hand. Oh, man, I'm there crying in pain. But he could do so many different things. And other times, we had a private group class. What happened, we started as a group class because my teacher, when I was taking, was Kachi Kempo instructor. He got killed in Vietnam. Mm. So all of us, there was like 12 of us that was taking lessons during high school time period. And then we decided to go look for a new teacher. And that's when we went to Art Muley Wong. So during our private classes, it was different. So he paid attention to our students. You know, we all wanted to learn. But after a lot of those guys dropped out, then I had to go into the regular classes. And that's where those guys are just sitting around and drinking soda and not really a structured class-wise. So, but when I was working with him there, the privates, I mean, he would show me different movements of breaking things, how he used to pound his fingers. We had different buckets there, one full of sand, pebbles, BBs, different things like that. And, you know, and then he did a technique on one of my classmates. Touched him and dropped him on the ground. And I was laughing. He said, you don't believe? Well, I said, no, sir. So he come up here. You know, I'm one of those guys. You got to show me.
That's it.
So he took his finger, he's only like 5'6". He had to reach up and come down to my head, and he popped me in my third eye, and I hit the ground. It was like taking a hammer hitting a block of wood. I mean, that's how loud it was sounding inside my head. And I dropped the ground, and then he said, come here, boy, rub medicine on your head before you die. That's all. And I mean, you know, it was something else. It was a dim monk. So, and I always related that to my students, you know, and so they always knew about it. So we went to Vegas a few years later to do a demonstration, and my student kept bugging Grandmaster Wong. So what, he keep telling us that you touch them and knock them out. I was like, yeah, but we don't have medicine here, boy. So
we can't do it.
Right. Said,
okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to hit you a little bit off the point, not on the exact point. And he did that. That boy was hurting all day long, all night. It was great. And after that, they believed. They said, yeah, I said, I'll tell you guys, you know, you know, anything he says or do, I believe after that point, you know, was, you know, he proved to me that he knows what the hell he's doing. And guys used to come in and challenge him all the time. You know, he'd say, what you gonna do, old man? And these are karate guys coming in. And so he'll go up there and he'll do his famous crane kick and kick him right in the bladder, make him pee on themselves right then and there. Oh, man, that old man was crazy.
I love it. I love it.
That's awesome.
He was great. And we used to travel a lot. We used to go to San Francisco and Marysville. That's where the first Chinese temple was built. And so it was called Bomb Day. And that's where the Su Sing Tong and the Hop Sing Tong will fight against each other on Sunday when they shoot these little coins up in the air. So whoever grabs it, there's certain ones that are worth more money. And talking about some kicking, some fighting. Yeah, there was some stuff going on. And we were part of the Hop Sing Tong. So I was always demonstrating Hop Sing Tong for my teacher, Grandmaster Art Wong and Grandmaster Shir Pei Lu, who's also a part of it. They were partners, you know, lion dancing partners. So it was a good old day. So, you know, we used to demonstrate for him there, and he'd take us to the tongs there in Marysville and introduce us and do different things like that. And it was a lot of fun, you know. And then the Hop Sing Tong in Los Angeles, we did many demonstrations there also, and lion dancing and different things like that. But, you know, he always used to take us out for lunch and different things and stuff like that. And when I first opened up my studio in 1973, he came over and visit many times to see the classes because we were under the five animal system during that time period. So he was always a jolly guy. I mean, he was something else. And we worked on a 1971, worked on a Kung Fu pilot film. So that was another great time that I got to work with him and a couple of my other senior classmates, Master John Leone and Master Ralph Shung. So we were all part of his Joaquin studio. Great times.
Wow. I was just going to ask, what, you know, out of all the styles you learned from him, what was your favorite?
The five animals are good because that's why I teach basically still over 50 years since we opened up our studio. But there was a system called Mokka, which is a style, which very few people know about or do. The way that was taught, you know. And my teacher, Tiny Lafitte, was the one to learn from Art Wong. He was also learned from Ralph Shung, who was Art Wong's number one boy. They had a school in Huntington Park when they first opened up. And then Ralph left to open up another studio, and Tiny kept that school in Huntington Park. So that's where I went to practice. And learn the fighting system that he had. It was, at first, he was part of the Lima Lama organization. It was Kino Tulasega was his cousin. So there was six.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there were cousins.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they developed the Lima Lama system. So the Tiny helped do it. So he's part of the first class of the Lima Lama system. Everybody kept calling it co-founders. They were not co-founders. Tino was the founder. And like he says, the rest of the guys are just my students. They're not co-founders. They were learning what I was teaching them. So that's why he was teaching them a lot of stuff, the old style. But see, he also learned from Art Wong. So he used to have the guys come to the garage and he had them sit in the square horse and he threw flour all around their feet so they couldn't move. They moved, you would see it kick up.
Huh.
So he'd come back an hour later to check on it. That's all he did was dances. So a lot of the stuff, the Lima Lama is influenced by Art Wong's style, you know, of horse training and things like that. So that's why a lot of the Lima Lama movements have the Chinese movements in there. So that's very good. So also, Tina would also learn from Art Ed Parker, who went over there started as a white belt up in a black belt level. So he also learned the Kempo system. So he has a certificate which was signed by Ed Parker and Art Nui Wong.
So, wow.
It's only seen once and we haven't seen it since. Been trying to get a copy of it, you know, since he passed away, but his wife won't release it. So,
Did you get to work with some of the splashing hands that Tiny did?
That's what we call Mokka. Splashing hands is Jim McNeil.
Okay.
Also learned from tiny, but at a different period, you know, after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he called a splashing hand. And then that's what everybody called it after that, you know, because he put out a videotape on it and so forth and this kind of stuff. But what we learned from Tiny was completely what he learned. I mean, his movement was not as clean as what we learned, you know, so it's a little bit different. I mean, I know the guy, Jim, for over 50 odd years, you know, so we have our ups and downs. And so it's there, but you know, what we did, what I did with my system is completely different from what he did. So he has a different approach because he learned from Shihan Shi, which was one of my healing teacher. But he also went, after he passed away, he went to learn from Shihan Shi's teacher. So they were teaching a different method of the Xing Yi style and the healing art.
Do you know... Because I don't know this, so I wanted to ask you, Sifu, is there somebody that's passing on Ark Wai Wong's full system?
His grandson, Si Ming, took over the heir of the system, so he's now teaching all over Mexico and South America, Peru, everywhere down there. So he's teaching, supposedly, all the art, you know, so... I was there before he came over to the United States, you know. So he came over later. So Grandmaster Wong used to have me drive him home on Sundays, you know, after classes and stuff like that. So I've known him long before that. And during that time period, I was trying to teach him some of the system up there privately behind the curtain. So, you know, I used to get him back there and try to show him. But I don't think he retained any of that stuff, you know. He knows the forms, so he's teaching it all. You know, sometimes he doesn't like the way I teach, you know, but I'm a whole different breed altogether. I was not just the five animal, five family, so that's
right.
So if you've seen some of my demos that we do, it's a whole completely different art. Those guys are, that's not five animal. I didn't say it was. You know, afterwards, there's elements in there, but mine is the White Lotus system. I said, my whole system is completely different. I said, none of you guys can match me when we do demos, so don't even talk about it. You know, I'm a whole different breed altogether. So I did most of my style, you know, because I learned different style. But, you know, when we did our demonstration, it was Hollywood style, Hollywood fool, as they call me, you know, because we did it. We'd show, you know, we put movements in there that nobody else had, or we didn't go through the complete forms, you know, because, you know, you do the starts, lunar, slunial, stuff like that. When we did the demo, I just took portions of the form, the main part. After they finished, they go halfway through, then the next weapon will start. After that, the next weapon will start. It was a continuation. It was like you're watching the Kung Fu movies. Everything's going high, and finally we stop. We're finished. That's it. And you still want more. So that's why I did all my stuff. Because, you know, I'm an entertainment business. It's a whole different thing altogether. That's why our guys are always so sharp, you know, doing top demonstrations from the 70s up to 2000, you know. So we're always wanted by everybody to do shows and stuff like that. So that's where we were. But, you know, we do have structure in our forms. I have 10 different levels. You have to go through, learn all the different forms, learn about the basics, the external, the internal, the meditation, qigong, everything. So it was all part of the art.
Wow. You started in a time period when it seems like functionality, like you've talked so much about it, and I love hearing you talk about it, because I think these days, especially in what people are calling traditional Chinese arts, it seems that the usage or the practicality in a self-defense method has been lost somewhere in the process. Was that the gold standard back then, Sifu, in the 60s and, you know, the whatever time period it was? If it worked, you trained it. And if it didn't, maybe I might keep it for posterity, but. You know, it seems like like you said, you had a melting pot. You were doing some karate. You were doing some Tang Soo Do. You were doing Hapkido. You were doing, judo, you know, your origin point. You know, it's fascinating because these days I just run into so many people that are moving their arms that have no idea what they're doing. Could you talk a little bit about that, Sifu?
Yes. When I first got into it, self-defense was very important, especially, I guess, when I was in the Kachi Kempo system. If it didn't work, why use it? Because there was guys, I mean, they were throwing kicks, punches, everything was for real. So you have to make sure that the technique worked. So that's why I based a lot of my fighting later on because of that, you know, precision. And especially after I started with Tiny. His whole thing was street fighting. It wasn't tournament fighting. He was careless about tournament fighting. It was street fighting. So he used to have us fight against each other. When we were fighting, he said, no backing up, no backing up. He had a baseball bat behind each one of us. When we backed up, we got whacked. After that, man, I didn't go backwards ever. I ran the sucker over. That was it. There's no way that he would stop me. So my technique was going forward, ending it quickly as possible. My school was always known as fighting. You know, we were doing full contact way back then. I mean, I was probably in the first one that we started here in California in 1970. Before all the kickboxing and everything else was going on. And so it was a tournament in La Fuente, and it was put on by Kempo and Lima Lama. And so when we got up there with the black belt level, you know, I was fighting. I was doing the whole thing all day long, taking the kids, putting the headgear on and stuff like that. So we were allowed to wear shoes. So we were fighting during that time period. So when it got to the black belt level, Chuck Norris's people, Mike Stones, all those guys, they all dropped out. Only ones left fighting in there were the Kung Fu people. And that was it. And so that's what we did. So if you look back at my history, you see that my system, I had a lot of the heavyweight Kung Fu fighters, middleweight Kung Fu fighters. They were winning. One of them fought Benny Nikitas. So that's all documented. That's all filmed. That's all. So, you know, what other Kung Fu schools do that out there? You know, Bob the Dragon Wilson was doing that, but that was later. I was out there in 1973 with the DKF guys. So we were fighting all these, when we started full contact fighting, that's where it was all started. Ben Nikitas and all the DKF guys, and a couple of guys with Hawaii, so for Mike Stone's people. So it was a lot of action going on during that time period. But I always based mine on street fighting. My method of fighting was, I put you up one put you up against a wall where you cannot move. So you have to defend yourself. So I have one guy throwing just punches. So he's working against two objects. Then I tell him, okay, now you got to add the feet. Now you got to fight against four objects. Then I put a second guy in there. Then I put a third guy in there. I put a fourth guy. You're fighting four guys at one time, and you got to try to block everything that's coming at you. And that's the, that's the way I thought. And then later on, instead of the hands and the feet, I start using sticks as a smaller object. So you have to really refine your blocking during that time period. So that's what I did. So that's why I trained my people. Highway Patrol, LAPD, Secret Service, FBI, you name it. They were learning. That's where I taught them. So there, you know, FBI guys up in San Francisco use all my techniques. They follow my videos and stuff like that. And they said, yeah, we could get a lot of guys. And that stuff works real well. I said, thank you. That's all I wanted, you know. So I was no nonsense. I didn't play that. The tournament thing is one way. You know, your point fighting and your that kind of stuff. It's not real fighting. My thing was for real on the streets. If you need law enforcement, you need to take somebody down, let's go. Let's do it. So that's what it was. So, yeah, our fighting was serious. Very serious.
And I had a question for you about the tournaments. From back then, like, were they mostly like points based, or was it like, what was the structure just kind of generally?
Then it was point, you know, in the Japanese one, you had ippon fighting. So it was a whole different structure. Then when you went to the regular open tournament, like the international, so forth like that, then it was point fighting again. Till later on the kickboxing era start coming in, and the blood and gut era, you know, so a lot of that stuff start coming in. So the fighting start changing. So
sure.
even the Chinese later on, because during that time period, there was no Kung Fu tournament. So in a way, they said that I've sort of forced the Kung Fu people to start having their own tournament. Hmm. Because, you know, they didn't understand our fighting. A lot of times, like when we went out, our first tournament that we went out in May 1973, we went to Tadashi Yamashita's karate tournament. I took 30 guys over there. We did Kung Fu forms, weapons, everything else like that. They didn't understand what the hell we were doing. The judges gave us zero.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
We were going crazy over the movements that we're doing, the jumps, the flips, the whatever we're doing. So we won the crowd, but the judges didn't understand what the hell we were doing.
Right.
So that first tournament, zero. Absolutely nothing. Second tournament we went was a Lima Lama tournament that was hosted by Tina Tulasega. Since he learned from Art Wong, he took those judges. He said, you have to, when you judge, you got to judge on their focus, their movements, their concentration, you know, all this kind of stuff like this. He's trying to get these karate guys just up to par. You can't judge them on karate movement. That was the whole thing. So after that tournament, man, we cleaned house. We won over 500 trophies in 6 months. We killed every tournament that was out there. So it didn't matter. And we were fighting. We were fighting with shoes on. We were the first school allowed to wear shoes in tournament. You know, the lightweight Kung Fu shoe. You know, I had, our group was so strong, and I had so much power during that time period. And all those karate tournaments, yeah, you can bring your boys. They want to fight and shoot. That's fine with us. And that's what's happened. So that's what we did. So we did fighting, weapons, form, everything that you can think of. And then in 1974, a lot of those guys said, we can't let you compete in our tournaments anymore. We will pay you to do demonstration. Because everybody else would not enter the division because we kept winning first, second, third, and white belt or the black belt. So we just take a truck there and just take all our trophies home.
That's great.
We're entertained. So that's what we did, you know. So, unless we went to out of state or someplace else, it was in the California local area, they wouldn't let us compete in the tournament. So we said, it's okay. We'll just do entertainment. Then we got discovered at Emil Farkas tournament where he had all the different Hollywood people come in. Producers and stuff like that. And we got picked up for a lot of different movie things. So that's what happened there. So we just stuck with the entertainment business. That's why my son now at a school, we have all these different stunt classes that we open up for actors and stunt people. So right there, they opened up a second studio in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's where a lot of the filming is done now, all the paintings.
Sure.
In Georgia, California. So my son hit it. So every time he has those classes, that's like four or five times a year, and they're packed. You know, they're filming within a week. You know, so those guys are trying to get into the motion picture. A lot of these guys, you know, you have a lot of these different groups throughout the United States, but they have no qualification. They've done maybe some local stuff, and so my son's done every national thing you think of in the Marvel world, in Fast and Furious world, you know, everything else. You know, so he's done all that Minion. He's done all the different music videos, all the big names. So there's a lot of that stuff. So that's why our school, you know, we still teach the Kung Fu part, but a lot of it's into the entertainment business now.
Are you okay with that, Sifu? I mean, is it one of the signs of the modern times? Because, I mean, you know, the entertainment side of things is going to be very different than the wushu side of things, but do you see that the traditional side still needs to be a center and focal point? Even if you do wushu, even if you do the Hollywood stuff, you really need to have a good, I feel like you kind of need to have a really strong foundation and actually understanding what you're actually doing, you know?
No, we still have all the traditional Kung Fu classes, Tai Chi classes, so it's there. A lot of guys take those classes and they take the extra classes. All the parkour, the free running classes, the different stunt fighting classes that we have. We have all those classes. So, you know, a lot of people try to get into the movie business. All they're trying to do is just martial art. Martial art is limited. How many movies out there, you know, are in the martial arts? They're not. If you're going to do all the flips, all the jumps, the parkour, the free running, that's what you need to add to your arsenal, into your knowledge piece. So that's why we have that. So before, you know, all we do was just Kung Fu and Tai Chi. So that's all we did. We just had the classes in the evening, maybe a few classes on the weekend. But, you know, how long can you sustain that? I mean, we did it for a long time, so it was no problem. And when we added the parkour, the free running, gymnastics and all that, break dancing, you name it, we had it there every class. And then we're open 7 days a week from 9 in the morning to almost midnight. So we're open classes. People will come in the afternoon from 12 to 4, and then we had them from 8 to midnight. And, I mean, we were
packed. Wow.
7 days a week. That's the way it did it, which you had to have something else. Then when the pandemic came, I killed a lot of this stuff. You know, so. So we lost a lot of business there, but we were still functional because we gave special classes in the stencil that kept us going on, you know, all the time. So we didn't limit different things. But now, you know, we're just full blast. You know, these schools never a problem. Always, we have best students from around the world. We got them everywhere. And we got all the different actors, you know, different stunt people, you know, name them. We always got all the top people there. So. All the guys, they practice in our studio, you know, from Japan, from Europe, from everywhere.
That's amazing. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on in Mexico, too. Could you tell us a little bit about some of your students down in South America?
In Mexico, per se, let's say we've been teaching down there since probably about late 80s. My student, Takuchi. Well, he was one of my top students from called the Garage Boys. This is what I like. Eight of them. And so when he opened up, he went to San Diego, opened up down there, and he's going back and forth between Juana and teaching my system of the White Lotus. And he was also down there with my other teacher, Sherpay Lucas. He was here in Los Angeles, and he moved down to the San Diego area. And since Todd was out there, so he started taking lessons with him also. And so we were teaching over the border. So, you know, Todd was working with a Japanese corporation. So he's going back and forth into Mexico. So he learned fluent Spanish. I mean, he was great. He name it, he can do it. So he used to do the interpretation for the Japanese company from Japan and even in Mexico. So that's how they did a lot of different things. So then in the meantime, he was teaching all the Kung Fu art that we were doing. Since then, I started going down there about 12 years ago. And I started teaching the White Lotus system. I was teaching mainly the fighting art, the forms, and so forth. And then I went down to Guadalajara. They took me down there. And so I was watching one of the guys. A couple of these guys were injured. They couldn't do it. I said, what's wrong? He said, I hurt my wrist practicing. I said, what happened? He said, so they told me this, so I said, well, come over here. So I restraightened it out. So I worked the tendons, worked the bone, realigned it, everything else. This guy said, oh, man, that feels good. Next thing I got 50 guys in the line waiting for me to test the body. And so that's when I started doing the healing aspect besides just the physical forms and the fighting and so forth. And so now I have so many guys down there are chiropractors, doctors, nurses. You know, just health aid people all learning my system. So I teach you my system of bone alignment, tendons alignment, so forth, herbal medicines. And so, and then a lot of my students are acupuncturists also. So they added all that in there. So I got doctors all over the place with my their business card, White Lotus, you know, healing. So it's all down there. So it's been great. That they carry on from behind there. Those guys, a lot of students in there are so devoted to learning the art and just seeking the knowledge. And now they're helping people. That's the main thing. So one of my students out there now, she's backed up by the government of Mexico now. So she
has
real classes. Yeah, she certifies them and so forth. So they want to have me come down there and do it. I said, since the pandemic, I haven't gone down there. You see a couple of my health issues right now. So I said, maybe in 2024, I'll go back down there and start going. They said, good, because we have a lot of people lined up that want to learn. So I said, Okay, we'll see how it goes. You know, that right now, yeah, my system's spread out down there. So it's working well. The heating's working well. I mean, they're doing everything.